Hi, and welcome to another edition of Pigeons with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby. And today I'm deeply honored to have in the studio with me a counselor, a mother, a woman that's powerful and dynamic, Melina Simmons. So,
oh.
Welcome to Visions, Melina.
Thank you, Yudeli. That was a very powerful introduction. Thank you.
Well, it suits the powerful woman you are. So today we're going to have a very tough conversation around emotional well-being, mental health maintenance, and people with disabilities, and the circle around people with disabilities. And I know generally this is a conversation that is even difficult for the average individual. So when disability is added to the mix, it can become a bit harder to deal with. So let's start, Melina, by talking about what is really emotional well-being and mental health, good mental health. Explain that for us.
Okay, thank you, Yudeli. When we talk about emotional well-being, we are actually talking about a broad range of experiences that a person will have. I would say at the core of emotional well-being is the ability to make choices that benefit the individual. So, yes, being emotionally intelligent is important, but it isn't simply about that. Because at the end of the day, your well-being includes your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, your financial health. So just about everything that impacts an individual's life. So when we think about emotional well-being, these are the sorts of things that we are talking about. Yes?
Okay, great. So as we talk about emotional well-being and good mental health, let's explore some of the simple and basic ways that we can maintain our emotional balance, our mental health balance within the family setting, you know?
Okay, excellent. So now notice just now I didn't tread on the mental health aspect of it, the mental well-being. Because one of the things that I have observed is that very often when you are experiencing emotional traumas, those things can lead to mental health. When persons talk about mental health in general, what they're talking about is those same things that I just mentioned, your ability to make good choices given your state of mind. Now, for a lot of us in our family settings, we don't very often think about the trauma that we have been through ourselves or the trauma that we are putting our children through. And now you add disability to that. That in and of itself is another traumatic experience that persons sometimes live their whole lives with. And sometimes it happens to you, you become disabled or differently abled during your lifetime. So you may have been born normal and then something has happened that caused you to lose one of your senses, one of your abilities. And that in itself is a challenge. When we are talking about emotional well-being, it is important, very, very important for us to start with compassion. And when I say compassion, I mean first and foremost the individual, and now I'm speaking to the adult. The individual must have compassion for themselves. They must be able to look at themselves and say, you know what? I am okay. That could be a challenge in and of itself, especially if you've grown up in an environment where people sort of just ignore you. They don't treat you well. They don't acknowledge and respect your abilities and your capabilities. That becomes very challenging and difficult for an adult. How do I feel good about myself when I've only heard things about myself that weren't positive and uplifting? There's a new word that's coming through when it comes to the family. It talks about reparenting yourself. I don't even really think it is so much reparenting. I think it is us acknowledging that, you know what? Things have been challenging for me, but I love myself enough to change how I choose to think about myself. So we start paying attention to those thought patterns. One of the things you can do to pay attention to it is put little sticky notes or have a friend, depending on, you know, what support you need. Put little sticky notes or little reminders. You can even put reminders in your phone that remind you, that ask you, what am I thinking right now? That way you start to catch yourself. But if you also set the intention to catch yourself when you are going down a negative road, then you have an opportunity to shift your thinking, because that is going to make a big difference to how you view yourself. Remember, the word I was talking about was compassion. Very often we think, oh, you're too stupid, or you're an idiot, because these are the things you've heard. When you make a mistake, stop. Allow yourself to think about something different. In other words, reframe it. So you made a mistake. Oh, wow, I've just learned one more way that I can do this. Or maybe that wasn't the best way, but let's find another way. What you are trying to do is to change that voice in your head. And that voice in your head very often comes from childhood, where people just weren't compassionate enough. It could come through the education system, where the expectations are well out of your range. But it comes from so many different places, from the society. We as a society just need to be a lot more loving and compassionate. But you as an individual, you have the responsibility to start with you. Once we start there, all right, because in some ways I've already mentioned a coping skill that you could use with the self-compassion. It's important to really love yourself. And when I say love yourself, it is more than finding an excuse. Sometimes it's as simple as giving yourself a hug. One of the things I've observed is that people do not seem to hug, not even the children do they want to hug. And we humans need touch. I'm going to say it again. We humans need touch. It is one way that we could connect with each other, but we also need to hug ourselves. And a self-hug is a simple thing. To be honest with you, I give myself hugs all the time. And I take it to the next level because I also rock myself. I don't know if you could recall sitting in a rocking chair, that feeling that you get. Well, I don't need a rocking chair to do that. But you know the feeling, right?
Yes.
Right.
I have a
So I
rocking
don't need a
chair.
rocking chair. I quite simply hug myself sometimes and just rock. For me, I find it very calming. I tend to do it in the night when I wake up and I can't get back to sleep. It soothes me back to sleep. So we need to have a few things to help us to self-soothe. And that is one of the ways that to me, so it's all coming into compassion, connection, but we need to be able to do these things for ourselves.
No, Melina,
I agree with you that we need to love ourselves through simple actions, like hugging ourselves, doing the self-talk, really positive self-talk. But there's so many individuals with disabilities who experience isolation, either sometimes imposed by relatives and family and friends, or sometimes they self-impose this isolation. And that too can lead to creating feelings of depression and other negative feelings. So how do we address this issue of isolation? How do we work around it and show that self-compassion and self-love?
Well, I think that you've made a very good start here in terms of making people aware of the issues, because awareness is the first thing. Persons need to be aware that someone who is differently abled still needs to have connection. We as a community still need to be compassionate, to reach out. Because you know what? I think we've come up in a society where when people were differently abled, the family felt a sense of shame, a sense of embarrassment. But there's no need for that shame or embarrassment because we know that when one sense, one ability is lost, not all is not lost. So there are other things that persons can do that we as a community need to be more involved with. We have to find ways to step out, to reach out, to do whatever it is we can to help that person connect. Now, when an individual, whether they're disabled or not, but when an individual is isolated, that isolation causes all sorts of mental distress. You mentioned one of them, which is depression. Now, if you're really severely depressed, my suggestion will always be to see a professional. Seek counseling. And sometimes you're not deep into depression, but you know that you just feel sad. You feel, I don't really have the word for it, but it's a feeling, just a low energy feeling. If you can identify that, then my suggestion is speak to a friend and let that friend help you if they can by taking you along with them on their own activities, on their own, whatever they're doing during the day. But it is really important when our mental health starts to fail that we seek some form of counseling, whether it is from the church, it is from a professional, it is a friend who has some experience, because not all friends have experience with listening carefully and advising you well. But sometimes we do have friends or family members who can do that. The challenge is that when someone is depressed, when they feel isolated, they do not want to reach out. So we in the community have to look out for them and reach out to them. That's where we can play our part in reaching out.
Good. And I'm glad you made that point in terms of reaching out, because what I want you to guide us on is how can family members, caregivers, and friends be able to identify, hey, this person wants some alone time versus this person is experiencing loneliness or, that feeling of not being visible, not being accepted or recognized.
Well, as a caregiver, family member of the community, if we are paying attention to the persons who are challenged in our community, we will begin to observe certain behaviors. If you're a caregiver, you might notice that the person doesn't want to eat the way they were eating before. So they may start suffering from a loss of appetite. You may also notice things like they're not taking good care of themselves. Their hygiene has declined. And it isn't that they are not able to clean themselves up. It is that they no longer have the drive or the desire to do it. When you start seeing things like that, the physical signs, you have to start asking questions. What is happening here? Yes, you could try to encourage the individual to take better care of themselves, and you can't just say, take better care of yourself. You have to literally get involved. You may have to help the person find clothes to put on and make it fun if you can. And when I say make it fun, take away all judgment. Allow them to say, oh, this feels good, or, what do you want to look like today? Do you want bright cherry colors? What? So that they're still involved in the activity. When we have children, while they're very young, we just say, okay, put it on this pants and this top or this dress. That's not what I'm talking about. We're not commanding. We're getting the person involved. All right. You might even do things like tell them, okay, would you like to put on a different perfume today so that they can have maybe a choice of two or three different scents that they like, or if they like powder, whatever it is. But in order to get to that place, you have to be talking with the person, male or female. You have to be speaking with them. You have to be looking, observing, paying attention, and this paying attention part is really important, because there are lots of things that a person is saying to you that is not coming out of their mouth. There are lots of things that people are saying that's not coming out of their mouth. So you have to look at the facial expressions, the body language. All of those things help us to understand where we can intervene. Now, yes, there are times people want to be on their own. They just need some quiet time. And that is okay too. But when that quiet time becomes too extended, that is a good time to intervene and say, hey, do you want us to go and take a walk on the beach, or, figure out what the person likes to do and just take them there, go out for a drive. You can go out for a drive and experience the sunshine on your face and just feel good about the place. And if you, as a caregiver, are really interested, you begin to learn how to describe things so that the person actually understands and feels your presence. They feel where they are. But again, it comes back to using your eyes, your ears, and I will say your heart, to really connect with the individual and to understand what it is this person wants. Because, yes, you may want a little alone time, that's fine. If a person is lonely, you may find that they may do things that they wouldn't normally do. But again, that requires close observation, because in order for you to know that it is not normal for the person, you have to know what is normal for them. All right? And loneliness is one of those, it could be hard sometimes to really grasp what loneliness is. Because even the individual might tell you, I am not lonely. I like being by myself. Which is why I said you have to begin to observe and understand their patterns and what they're doing so that you can tell something isn't quite right here. But any person who is only at home is missing out on what is happening outside and around them. And sometimes loneliness ties in with grief. And grief, oh wow, Grief could come from losing a friend, even losing an ability, because we think that the physical healing of the body is all there is. But there is also the mental and emotional part, the loss. Let's say, for example, you became disabled because you lost a leg, all right? That loss of the leg is something that we grieve. And then there are all the other emotions that go along with grief, which is why I said to you, when someone is going into depression or they're there in depression, they really do need some sort of specialized intervention, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a mental health practitioner, even a trauma specialist, because depending on the nature of the loss, the nature of the event, that person might have experienced trauma. So, as caregivers, as family members, we need to show a bit more care. And I want to add here that sometimes the reason why an individual, let's say a family member or a caretaker, isn't able to properly observe and be compassionate and all of those things is because they are not doing it for themselves. Because you cannot give to somebody else what you do not have in yourself. Caregivers, in particular, caregivers need to take time out on a regular basis to take care of themselves. Because when you are a caregiver, you are actually very emotionally connected with the individual. And sometimes caregivers get home and they say, "Oh my gosh, I feel so drained, but I didn't really do anything much today." Yes, you've been working hard. You've been working hard at an emotional level. So caregivers themselves need to take care of themselves, to be compassionate. All the things I was telling you about, to connect, to watch their inner voice. What is that saying to them? Do they feel resourceful? Do they feel capable? Because sometimes you just feel you don't know what to do. You may feel overwhelmed. They themselves, caregivers, need to have someone else that they can relate to, that they could reach out to, someone who they feel is going to keep what they're sharing confidential. And sometimes you have to make sure that you say to this person, the person you're talking to, "So I'm talking to you in confidence here," and hope and believe that the person will, in fact, keep the information in confidence to the extent that it is possible to do so. Because if you have come across someone who is depressed, who is doing physical harm to themselves, then you definitely need to speak to a health practitioner, a medical person, even if you know that the individual doesn't want you to speak to anybody. You still need to do that because you'll be irresponsible if you don't. You wouldn't want to come in one day and find that the person, has done serious damage.
Now, as you spoke, Melina, one of the points that came to my mind is that communication fatigue, where the individual with the disability or the caregiver may have to be explaining so much, repeating the same information to different people, medical, emergency people, social services, whoever, that sometimes they feel overwhelmed. How can they combat this? How can they release some of that tension?
I'm smiling because the first thing that pops into my head is that you have a phone. And most phones have something called notes, where you could take voice notes. As a caregiver, that is going to be one of your best helpers. If you feel repeating and repeating is draining you, which it can, use the voice note aspect of your phone. Most phones these days have that capability. so that when you say it once, you can actually convert it into text if you need. And it allows you to have something that you could give to somebody else, whether it's a specialist, a medical person, whatever. Use that feature. I think that that will be a big help to persons in that capacity. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now, Melina, our time has caught up with us. We've been
Yes.
discussing this topic so easily that I would want to invite you back, that we could continue this conversation and explore emotional well-being a bit more, maintaining our mental health. So I want to say
Yeah.
thank you so much for coming and sharing with us today. I certainly have learned a thing or two, which I will also implement, and I appreciate this.
Thank you so much, and you're most welcome. I look forward to joining you again.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby, and my very special guest, Counselor Melina Simmons. We've been discussing emotional wellness and mental health maintenance. So I'm inviting you to tune in again when we continue this conversation. You can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So until next week, continue to love yourself and love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. Until then, ciao.
Thank you.